Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, April 6, 2017. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Decatur Residents, Business Community, Mostly Positive on Election Results, by Allison Petty and Tony Reed, Herald and Review. Decatur. At least for the present, Decatur residents are ready to put this election in the past, welcoming new office holders and the promise they represent to do things a little differently. Residents and business leaders mostly signaled approval Wednesday with consolidated election results, which saw the return of Mayor Julie Moore Wolf, new faces on the Decatur School Board and City Council, and passage of a public safety tax increase. Prevailing over challenger John Phillips 53% to 47% in Tuesday's election, Moore Wolf became the first woman elected as Decatur mayor, according to unofficial vote totals from the Macon County Clerk's office. She is also the first woman to hold the office, having been appointed in 2015 following the death of former Mayor Mike McElroy. Longtime political observer Paul Osborne saw the results as a sign that residents, at least a majority of those who voted, are happy with the city's direction. It kind of puts to rest the movement that she should not be in there and the city manager should not be in that position and those things need to change, said Osborne, editor of the Decatur Tribune and a former mayor. Osborne was referring to city manager Tim Gleason, whose job performance became a central issue during the final weeks of the campaign. Phillips had said the manager needed to be guided and coached, while Moore Wolf had expressed support for his actions, including his handling of the February 2016 firing of former police chief Brad Sweeney. Sweeney, who became a supporter of Phillips' campaign, alleged wrongful termination in a lawsuit against the city. I think this takes some of the pressure off that simmering feud that's been going on, Osborne said. Like the city races, Decatur's school board campaigns heavily featured discussion of a person who wasn't running, former Superintendent Lisa Taylor. Taylor left Decatur last year for the high school principal's job in the Haworth School District, where she has since been named superintendent. During the last several months of Taylor's time in Decatur, questions arose about use of the district's procurement credit cards, both by Taylor and Chief Instructional Officer Edward Moyer, who resigned effective June 30th. Incumbents B.A. Butts and Alita Graham were among four board members at the time who referred requests for comment to Board President Sherry Perkins, while three remaining board members were vocal about their support of Taylor and extending her contract. Perkins would say only that the board was not required to extend the contract nor make a decision at that time. Taylor gave her notice last spring, which led to a search for a new superintendent. The school board voted unanimously March 28th to hire Paul Fergau for the job. Fergau will report to a board with four members not involved in his hiring, as Butts and Graham were defeated for their seats, along with challenger Al Scheider and write-in candidate Janice Gavin. The victors were candidates Kendall Briscoe, Beth Creighton, and Beth Nolan, who ran as a slate called Partners in Leadership for Us, and the Reverend Courtney Carson. I think voters in that race left no doubt they wanted change, Osborne said. First female mayor. Moore Wolf's election came more than four decades after Carol Brandt became the first woman to join the Decatur City Council in 1975. Brandt said it took some time after she was elected for other council members to take her seriously. But she was a good listener, who ultimately earned their respect. They kind of patted me on the head and ignored me for a while, she said with a chuckle. She was happy to see Moore Wolf elected, not only because of the milestone for women, but because she thought the mayor was the best choice. Hopefully, residents voted for the person they thought would be the best leader for Decatur, said Brandt, 84, who remains interested in local politics and cast her vote 2 days before the election. Kathy Thornton, eating lunch at the downtown cafe on Wednesday, said she approved of Moorwolf's resume as a WAND anchor and former executive director of the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce. "I feel like it's harder for women to get some of these positions in our city. I like Julie. She has a lot of community experience," Thornton said, adding, "Whoever is in charge, what we need is better schools and more jobs for our town." Nadine Wimmer, also eating lunch at the downtown cafe, said too much emphasis had been placed on Moorwolf's gender in light of her victory. "What's the difference? Both men and women can have brains, education, and experiences," said Wimmer of Decatur. "One could do as well as the other. People should just look at the qualifications." Business community pleased. A snapshot of Decatur's business community found an upbeat mood in the wake of the election. Ken Clark, owner of the Clean Cut Painting and Handyman business, said he was happy about the city's leadership continuing under Moorwolf, the first woman to win a mayoral election in her own right in Decatur's history. "I feel positive about the mayor's election and the whole city council," said Clark. He also liked the fact that challenge candidates made a clean sweep of the Decatur School Board. He's hoping the new board members will seek to lift the quality of education so that employers deal with graduates ready and able to work. "I was in manufacturing for 20 years, and you had to go through 15 or 20 people to be able to hire one," Clark added. Adam White, a pro-sales specialist at Lowe's and president of the Board of Operations for Lincoln Square Theater, said he believes the election left the city council leaning in the right direction. He was also particularly pleased to see the Decatur School Board welcoming four new members. "That was something I think Decatur really needs," said White, 32. "I think we need a fresh look in there that generates new ideas, which will help drive a better school district for Decatur." Lori Sturgill, the producer-director of Decatur Celebration, was also in celebratory mood, too, particularly overseeing Moorwolf returned as mayor and seeing Briscoe elected to the school board. Briscoe is the Celebration's board president, and Sturgill said she is armed with a lot of talent that will help move the school board forward. "Kendall has a great aptitude for leadership, and she is super creative," Sturgill said. "She has the ability to think outside the box and the ability to do what she says she is going to do, and that is the biggest thing." Johnny Wallace, manager of the downtown convenience store at 117 North Main Street, said he was pleased overall with the outcome of the election. He was especially happy to see that Carson won, as the store had put up a sign in support of his school board run. Wallace remarked on Carson's journey from one of the so-called Decatur Seven, expelled from school after a fight at Eisenhower High School in the 1990s. "Carson now mentors other young men and is an ordained minister." "Ain't that something?" Wallace said. "He's turned his life completely around." Safety tax second chance. An increase in sales tax, known as the law enforcement safety tax, and targeted to help fund the Macon County Sheriff's Office, drew voter approval of 58.4%, according to unofficial total. The measure, expected to generate $2.5 million, will cost residents 25 cents for every $100 spent on tangible goods. It must still be approved by the Macon County Board, officials have said. Supporters said the sheriff's office would be able to fill vacant posts and bring back eliminated specialty positions with the money, while opponents said Macon County residents are taxed enough already. A similar referendum failed in November, causing advocates to launch an informational campaign designed to educate voters. Some residents, such as Kathy Thornton, saw the move as a necessity. "I think sometimes, whether we like it or not, we have to raise taxes. It happens," Thornton said Wednesday. "Sorry, but it happens. I voted for it." Diane Gifford of Decatur expressed cautious optimism. "I think that could be a plus, but we'll have to see how that works out," she said. "We're not going to know that for a while. We'll just have to see how that money is spent. In addition to new leadership and a boost for law enforcement, Osborne said the community would benefit one more outcome of the election, its end. It seemed like it went on for years instead of months. I think sometimes you get embroiled in these races, and the community pauses for a while and maybe starts choosing sides, he said. Hopefully, now that the election is over, we can concentrate more on moving the city ahead. Families seek other options as Richland closes child care center. By Ryan Voiles, Herald and Review. Decatur. Richland Community College officials blamed budget pressures Wednesday for the upcoming closure of the college's child care center, slated for May 19th. The move could cause headaches for dozens of families that have come to rely on the Adele P. Glenn Early Childhood Education Center since it opened in 2009. It comes as part of Richland administrators' efforts to address a $2.6 million loss in revenue over the past 2 years. Much of it blamed on a decline in enrollment and money coming in from local property taxes, as well as the lack of a state budget for nearly 2 years. Among those affected would be Cassandra Trimby, a 25-year-old student who has used the center for her children, Aveda, 4, and Remy, 2, while she attended classes. The hope for Trimby was to become a full-time student this summer, but the college's budget turmoil has put those plans in peril. I was thinking they would both be able to be there all day, and I could afford it while I was going to school full-time. But now I won't be able to do that since they won't have the daycare, she said. Honestly, right now I'm at a standstill. The center has served children ages 2 to 12, while school-age children could be enrolled after 3 p.m. and during the summer. Richland President Chris Valdez said the idea of closing the center came during an evaluation by college administrators seeking ways to reduce the budget by $1.4 million from the current fiscal year. Keeping the center open did not make financial sense in light of budget issues facing the college, he said. It's a good service, but it is not the core of what we do as an educational facility, Valdez said. We are certainly empathetic of those who are losing the services, but we also do not want to be competition to those small and local businesses who are also providing these services to the community. Currently, 35 families use the center, according to numbers provided by Richland. Of those, one was an employee of the college, 8 were students, and the rest were members of the community. A recent headcount for children in the center during the week was just over 20 per day. The numbers provided by the college showed the center has lost $463,000 since 2012. The loss this current fiscal year was $55,200, down from the $83,162 lost during the 2015-2016 fiscal year. Even if the center were near or at full capacity, Valdez said the college likely still would lose money by offering the service. Valdez did not rule out the college providing child care services once its budget situation stabilizes. He said conversations have already begun with Heartland Technical Academy about using the space to continue its educational programs. He also did not rule out finding partners with interest in operating a child care service within the existing space. The space is designed for an early childhood education program. We just do not believe that we can offer it at this time, Valdez said. So maybe we can still utilize the facility in a similar fashion. That is an opportunity for us that we'll look into. Parents were notified in a letter sent last Friday, letting them know that child care services would be suspended due to the college's budget deficit. It's with great regret I must inform you that the Adele P. Glenn Early Childhood Education Center at Richland Community College will close effective May 19, 2017, said the letter, dated March 31st and signed by Center Director Kimberly Brummett. It also provided links to other centers and preschools in the area for parents to contact. Brummett directed questions about the center to the college's administration. Valdez said the college tried to notify parents early about the closure to give them enough time to find alternative child services. Angel Kirlik said the time was not nearly enough. Kirlik, a stay-at-home mother of two, has had her 4-year-old daughter, Regan, enrolled in the center since the school year began. She said she enjoyed the flexible scheduling at the center, as well as its price compared to other options in the area. She paid $60 a week for 4 half-days. The plan was to keep Regan in the program and enroll her 5-year-old son, Kellen, during the summer. But since she received the letter last week, she said her family has instead been searching for other options, often hearing back that she needs to place her children on a waiting list or that the hours do not line up. "It has been a disaster since we were told about the closure," she said. "We're having a hard time trying to find a place that will have our daughter kindergarten ready. I don't think Richland truly understands that all these kids that need placement, that there's not enough space for them in town." Kirlik said the lack of communication from the school that the closure was a possibility stung. She said the college could have been more forthcoming about the possibility of the closure, or even given parents the option to enroll children full-time to help offset some of the cost of operation. "I think a lot of the parents would have opted to pay for the additional costs because they loved the program so much," she said. "Richland really could have done a lot more to promote this service." The center opened in 2009 to much fanfare, with the idea that the center would not only provide the latest equipment and teaching techniques for children, as well as be a laboratory learning experience for Richland students pursuing early childhood degrees, and for students in other colleges and universities who need lab experience. The center was expanded in 2014, creating enough space for 70 children and a teacher workspace, a gym area, and classrooms to serve as a lab for Heartland Technical Academy students. The expansion was a part of a $16 million capital initiative that saw renovations across the campus. Preparations for next year's budget will not include any revenue from the state, Richland officials have said. The budget this year did not include any state grant funding, which would have equaled $2.2 million. In the past 3 months, the college has eliminated 5 administrative positions and announced plans to lay off 18 employees, 8 full-time and 10 part-time, and offer buyouts to an additional 14 full-time staff. These cuts end the first of what Valdez said will be a 2-phase process to reduce the college's budget by 9.2%, or $1.4 million, from the current fiscal year. The second phase will begin next year, when Valdez said administrators will evaluate future steps to reduce the budget. Crime and courts. Man in custody after car fire, police standoff at Circle K. H&R staff report. Decatur. Police said a man wielding a baseball bat was taken into custody following a standoff and car fire at a Decatur gas station early Wednesday. Decatur Police Lieutenant Brad Allen said police received a call shortly before 2 a.m. about an agitated man in the parking lot of Circle K, 1685 South Baltimore Avenue. There was also a report of a fire, though no fire was discovered when authorities arrived. The call came in not long after the Decatur Fire Department responded to a car fire at Walmart, 4625 East Maryland Street, Battalion Chief Todd McKenzie said. It was unclear if the incidents were related. Police evaluated the situation after arriving on the scene and decided not to approach the man, who was displaying erratic behavior and was armed with a bat, Allen said. "It took a while to get him under control," he said. During the interaction with police, the suspect lit the car on fire. Gas pumps had been turned off from inside the store, McKenzie said. A Herald and Review editor at the scene observed the suspect swinging the bat and taunting police as the fire slowly engulfed the car. When the fire appeared to be spreading to the nearby gas pump, the decision was made to extinguish the blaze. Armed police officers provided cover for the firefighters as they battled the fire. As the police and firefighters got closer, the suspect hid behind another gas pump, exposing himself for brief moments before running away toward the back of the convenience store. The pursuing police officers and canine units immediately took him into custody. He was placed in an ambulance around 3:20 a.m. and taken to a hospital for observation, Allen said. Speaking later Wednesday morning, Sergeant Chris Copeland said the 30-year-old Cerro Gordo man was arrested, but not incarcerated, and given a notice to appear in court on arson charges. Parolee exposes himself to letter carrier, police say. By Huey Freeman, Herald and Review, Decatur. Demiro Brazier, a 33-year-old Decatur parolee, is facing new charges after he allegedly grabbed the arm of a letter carrier and exposed himself to her. The letter carrier was working on her route December 19th when she approached a residence in the 2000 block of North Monroe Street. She was initially going to hand the mail to a child who she knew lived at the address, but Brazier said he would take the mail, Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said. When the 51-year-old letter carrier walked up to the porch and reached through the railing spindles to hand the mail to him, Brazier stood up, grabbed her wrist, and said, "I have something for you," said Copeland, reading from a police report. When Brazier stood up, he exposed himself to the woman, who observed that his pajama bottoms were pulled down. The letter carrier walked away from the residence and called the police. Brazier was arrested on misdemeanor charges the same day and ordered to appear in court in January. But on December 28th, he was returned to the Illinois Department of Corrections for a parole violation. He was serving a 6-year sentence for manufacture, delivery of cocaine in a 2012 case and had been released on parole in 2015. He was released from prison on parole once more on Thursday, then booked into the Macon County Jail. Brazier was arraigned Friday in Macon County Circuit Court on charges of public indecency and battery. He was then released from jail after $500 cash bail was posted for him on Friday. He is due back in court May 2nd to present his attorney. Brazier has 7 felony convictions in Macon County cases since 2002 and has served 7 terms in the Illinois Department of Corrections. He was sentenced to 4 years for residential burglary, 3 years each for aggravated battery, public place, robbery, and theft, and a 1-year and 2-year term for domestic battery and bodily harm. Davis triplets are one of a kind, by Donette Beckett, Herald and Review, Shelbyville. When Arlene Roberts delivered her babies on April 6, 1967, maternity staff at Shelby Memorial Hospital told her they were the only set of identical triplets born in Shelby County. For the past 50 years, Roberts has been waiting for news of another family in Shelby County that has shared her miraculous feat of delivering identical triplets. She is still waiting. Roberts and her husband, George Davis, believe that their children, Thad Davis, Tad Davis, and Brad Davis, are the only identical triplets born in the county. "And it was natural. I didn't have a fertility pill or anything," Roberts said. Celebrating their 50th birthday today, the brothers still have a reputation in their hometown of Shelbyville. Tad Davis now lives in Stonington, and Thad Davis has moved to Decatur, but they often hear stories about their birth when they are visiting family. People will ask, "What's it like to be triplets?" "Well, what's it like not to be triplets?" Tad Davis said. "That's all we know. We're in a small town. Nobody treated us any differently." Others were confused by family dynamics and how to address the boys. We were asked, "Are you three twins?" Thad Davis said. The remarks often come from people they haven't seen since childhood, and sometimes people call them by the wrong names. "I've had people come up and talk to me, then get upset that I don't know them," Brad Davis said. "You work with me, Why don't you know who I am? According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, 3,871 triplets were born in the United States in 2015, and only four sets were identical. Identical triplets come from a monozygotic pregnancy, three fetuses from one egg. Triplets are far less common than twins, according to the CDC, accounting for only about 4,300 sets in 3.9 million births, just a little more than 0.1%. According to the American Society of Reproductive Medicine, only about 10% of those are identical triplets. Roberts experienced complications during her pregnancy, but was unaware of the number of children she was carrying until shortly before their births. "I was 6 months pregnant and gained only 1 pound," she said. "I was very sick." On her 21st birthday, Roberts underwent x-rays to analyze any problems. The doctors had to confer with each other to see if they agreed with what they were seeing. "You could see three heads and the spines and little legs and arms everywhere," Roberts said. "We left shocked, laughing, and crying," George Davis said. "It wasn't as scary as we thought it would be, but it was expensive." The boys were born by cesarean section 4 weeks before the due date. All were less than 5 pounds. Because they were underweight, they were taken to St. John's Hospital in Springfield until they reached the 5-pound mark. After 6 weeks, they arrived home with their parents and 3-year-old brother Todd. Since the births, the triplets have given their parents other concerns and worries. "We were always going to the hospital getting stitches," Thad said. When they came home from the hospital, each baby was given a bracelet from the hospital with his name printed on it. After they grew out of the small hospital bands, their parents purchased little gold bracelets with their names on them. Throughout his children's lives, George Davis has trusted the nurses who labeled the boys. "So it's possible that we've had their names mixed up," he said. Editorial, thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the victors and to the unsuccessful challengers in Tuesday's elections. Unlike many races throughout the state of Illinois, Decatur was blessed with superb candidates. The voters have had their say. It's now time for the victors to begin the hard work of leading. Thumbs up to Caterpillar, bringing 500 jobs to Decatur. We take no joy in the closing of the Aurora plant. Decatur has seen its share of factory closures, and we know all too well the pain, disruption, and rippling effect of what those closures mean. That's a big part of the reason we celebrate this good fortune for us. Thumbs down, again, to the cuts made at Richland Community College. Daily, this newspaper and other media outlets deliver reports of the fallout of the inability of Illinois politicians to deliver a budget. Daily, people who have done nothing but report to their jobs faithfully find themselves in life-changing and life-challenging situations. At some point, politicians have to wake up and solve this crisis, don't they? There's no time like the present. Thumbs up to the Decatur Police Department for being proactive with recruits. For any number of reasons, law enforcement work is not as attractive for today's job seekers. But police departments like Decatur's refuse to lower their standards. It's a good policy, and taxpayers should be appreciative. Thumbs up to Illinois Democratic lawmakers who are pondering implementing internet safeguards. The decision is in reaction to Republicans in Washington voting to roll back Obama-era internet privacy protections that were to take effect later this year. We understand those who find laughable the idea of internet privacy in an era where Facebook and Twitter often tell us more about our fellow man than we ever desired to know. But the internet is more than a marketing target, and privacy is something on which we still place some value, even if we're sometimes unlikely to behave as though we do. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for Thursday, April 6, 2017. Please stay tuned.